Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Now, for a while now, there's been this thought or this rumor or even a suggestion that Rob Gronkowski is not actually retired. That he did say he was retired, but he's not actually retired, and that he's going to simply take some time off, and then he's going to come back at some point. But if what he said yesterday is true, to me, he sure as hell better not do that. At one point, talking yesterday, he sounded almost exactly like another guy who retired at 29. Of course, he sounded like Andrew Luck.
But I want to be clear to my fans. I needed to recover. I was not in a good place. Football was bringing me down, and I didn't like it. And I was losing that joy in life.
I mean, we're talking about a guy. In fact, I would argue we're talking about two guys that absolutely love the game. You're going to find me a guy who loves football more than Gronk? Andrew Luck? See how emotional Gronk got when he was talking about that? And he said almost exactly what Andrew Luck said, that it got to a point where I was in a bad place. I didn't like football. The joy of it got sucked right out of it for me. And before you all go to, yeah, it's because you don't like doing rehab, he got into the grisly details of an injury that he suffered in the Super Bowl that looked like an ordinary play to the rest of us, an injury that let him know that it probably was time to retire.
And I got done with the game. I could barely walk. Now I could barely walk. I'm at the after party. I go to after party like this. I sit down, and I'm just chilling all day, like the rest of the night till like 3 a.m. I try to go to bed. I slept for 5 minutes that night. I couldn't even think. I was in tears in my bed after a Super Bowl victory. It didn't make that much sense to me. And then for 4 weeks, I couldn't even sleep for more than 20 minutes a night after a Super Bowl win. And I was like, damn, like, this sucks.
Yeah, that would suck. Supposed to be the pinnacle of your career and your life, and you're miserable, and you hate the game, and you can't sleep. And you know what sucks more than only getting 20 minutes of sleep for a month? Having internal bleeding. That sucks even worse. And Gronk says he had it.
I had internal bleeding. I took out 200 milliliters of blood 4 weeks later. And then another week later, even more started flowing in. I took out 500 milliliters of blood. And then I took out 300 more milliliters of blood from my quad.
Now, if you've not been doing the math on that, don't worry. Gronk has you covered on that as well.
So it's a total of 1,000 milliliters I took out of my quad in the last, over the four-week period after the Super Bowl. 1,000 milliliters out of the quad, I'm telling you, like, it's not normal.
Yeah, no, that isn't normal. How much blood are we talking about coming out of his quad? All right, so go to your refrigerator. Look for a big bottle of soda. I know you've got one in there. Take out that big bottle of soda. Then picture that half of that is filled with Gronk's blood. Imagine having that much blood being drained from your quad. That would suck, right? And that's just one of his injuries. So now come in here and tell me that NFL players aren't tough. That guys who walk away from the sport are quitters, or they're soft, or they're weak, or they're lazy, and they don't want to do the work. Before that quad injury that required draining a big gulp worth of blood, Gronk had suffered the following. A back injury. It cost him an entire season in college. A high ankle sprain that required surgery. Crazy hip pull. A forearm fracture. He fractured it again, which called for three more surgeries. A vertebrae fracture. A concussion. A torn ACL. A torn MCL on the same play. A knee strain. A hamstring pull. A lung bruise. A vertebral disc hernia that required surgery, a thigh bruise, another concussion, and another back and ankle injury that cost him 3 games. And as always, these are only the injuries that we know about. And here's the thing. Gronk said yesterday, quote, physically, I could play right now, but mentally, he's not ready. So let me say this right now, Gronk. I'm going to save you some trouble. You don't need to think about this. I mean, it is your body. It is your life. You didn't ask for my opinion. I'm not in the business of telling people what they should and should not do with their bodies and their lives. But my man, do not come back. Seriously, do not come back. Don't even think about coming back. Don't even look back. For who? For what? You're a three-time Super Bowl champion, a five-time Pro Bowler, arguably the most dominant player ever at your position, and you got out of the game at 29. Dude, you won. You got over. You're known for being extremely careful with your money, so I know you don't need the cash, so why would you bother coming back? When you know the toll it's already taken on your body and your mind, why would you come back? There's so many other things that you could do with your life. And there's so much more to your life than smashing the crap out of people and getting the crap smashed out of you. I mean, coming back would be like the bank robber who tries to go back for one more score. Last score. We've all seen that movie. It never works. It always ends terribly. He gets greedy. It ends in disaster when he should have walked away while he could. This is exactly how that's going to go if Gronk comes back. I don't want to see it. My man, you got out. You got over. You got to do what so few players get to do, leave on your own terms and do it right after a Super Bowl. You're walking off on a Super Bowl. So enjoy it. Enjoy your life. Get healthy. Enjoy your health. How many more Super Bowl rings are enough? How many more back surgeries are too many? Hey, don't get me wrong. The game is better when Gronk is playing. We've never seen anybody like this guy in the field. We might never see anybody like him ever again. But that's okay with me. What I don't want to see is a busted up, broken down Gronk. A Gronk whose body is destroyed and whose spirit is broken by the game. Part of what made this guy great was the joy he brought to the game. And he said it himself. When the joy was gone, it was time to bounce. You listen to your body and your mind the first time. Keep on listening to that. Do not come back. Again, big fella, I know you did not ask for my opinion, but you're going to get it anyway. Stay the hell away. The reward no longer outweighs the risk. At least not in your case, big dog. If you need any other advice, you know where to find me. I'll be right here. No way I would come back if I were that guy. 1-800-636-8686. Sorry, Pats fan. But I wouldn't. Given the way he has set his life up, I would not do it. Bill Clark. Bill, it's so good to have you back. How are you?
I'm good, Jim. How are you?
Good, good. So let me ask you this. A few weeks back, you tweeted, quote, blessed to coach a fine group of young men. Don't want to forget that in the middle of training camp, end quote. Bill, you and I have talked about the road that you and that program have traveled over the years, but how special is it to be where you are right now, preparing for another season and being around a group of guys like this?
It's special. I mean, I think that's the thing I always talk to our coaches about. You know, let's remember why we got into this, who inspired us. You know, and I know sometimes that can kind of sound corny or hokey, but it's really, I mean, really that's what it's supposed to be about. And, you know, referring to that tweet, you know, training camp is just, man, it's a grind and you're pushing them and pushing them. And I always want to bring the players back to why we're playing the game. I want to bring the coaches back to it. So it's special to coach, a really good group of young guys that believe, you know, and I think anytime people believe in something, it makes it a lot easier.
UAB head coach Bill Clark joining us here in the jungle. So when you look at last year's team, you lose a lot of experience from that squad with something in the neighborhood of 30 seniors moving on. I would say it sounds like a rebuilding job, but nothing compares to the rebuilding that you've done there in the past. So when you approach spring and fall camp, how have you gone about getting the younger guys ready to step up?
Well, I think, you know, that was one of the things that we knew was coming. And I, you know, when you say, all right, we got 34, 35 seniors. At one time, we had 40-something.
Wow.
You know, probably when me and you first talked, it was, you know, we had all these guys we had to bring in, and I knew there would be attrition. So we've really been trying to work those guys. We knew we had to bring in a few more junior college guys to kind of catch up. And I think since January, we start talking about what a bullseye on you looks like, you know, and what is the expectation when you have won. And, you know, I think from a purely off-season, spring training, summer, all those were just from a, you know, them showing up with great attitudes was as good as I've been around now. How does that translate, you know, tomorrow night to when it actually, you know, you come under the lights, we'll see. But I am proud of where we are right now, and I'm excited about this group.
Bill Clark joining us. They get underway again tomorrow night. Let me ask you about the offense. You've got Tyler Johnston, who is returning at quarterback. He stepped in last year due to injury. He had some huge moments down the stretch. What did he show you, but how he handled the pressure of the moment last year when called upon?
Well, you know, he's a pretty special young guy. He was a guy that never really lost a high school game, and I think it started as a freshman. So I knew him then. You know, my son played with him, so that was a relationship that really helped us get him, really, and his brother, who was another really good player. he really was the epitome of what a backup should look like. You know, hey, I want to play, but I'm gonna do my time. And so when AJ Early got hurt, he was sitting there ready to go. And I think people got to see what a winner this guy is. It's amazing how he influenced his teammates to be better people and harder workers and all the things you want out of a quarterback. You know, I think he's had a great offseason. He's worked on a lot of the little things that we thought he needed to work on to get better. Now we're trying to develop, you know, not just him, but the guys behind him, because now we got the next guy up in case something happens to him. But he's really had a good offseason. I know he's ready to go tomorrow night.
Hey, check this out. We all say do not judge a book by its cover, but we also know that's exactly what most people do. Appearance can be everything, especially in a professional situation. This is why I want to talk to you about that bag over your shoulder. Are you still carrying that old college backpack to work or around town? It's a bad look if so. It's time to grow up, look the part. Get yourself a Daniels briefcase. Daniels is a New York City-based men's leather briefcase brand that is making boys look like men, one bag at a time. The best part, you can afford this bag before you land the big job. That's the key. How is that? They cut out the middlemen. They sell directly to you. Daniels, therefore, is able to offer a high-quality, luxury leather briefcase at an incredibly reasonable price of $195. You compare that to luxury brand names with starting prices closer to $500. This is the kind of briefcase you want to rock when you walk into an office. The leather is high quality. And if you have to transition from workday to date night, it's perfect for that, too. This week, you can get $25 off your Daniels briefcase at DanielsNYC.com. DanielsNYC.com. Just make sure you use the promo code ROME at checkout. That's $25 off one of their leather briefcases. Plus, they offer free shipping. Again, go to DanielsNYC.com. Use the promo code ROME and get $25 off a handcrafted, high-quality leather briefcase with free shipping. Ditch that old backpack. Start looking like a pro. DanielsNYC.com. I love their leather briefcases. I know you will too.
We're talking to Bill Clark. What about the defense? Last season, that defense was absolutely nasty. There is some talent to replace there, but what kind of things have you seen from them thus far, and what are you expecting to see from the defense tomorrow night?
You know, we may be a little faster. If you watch the Raiders, you're seeing one of our guys right now at nose and rush from last year. You see a guy with a Falcons, a guy with a Vikings. So, you know, obviously we lost some really good players, especially on the edges and in the front of that D-line. But we think we've done a good job recruiting. We think we've guys that have kind of been waiting their turns, and them young guys went out and got a few more transfers, junior college guys in. So we'll see. But I really like the team speed out of this group. But there is a high expectation for us defensively always. And so we'll see how they live up to that group from last year.
Bill Clark joining us. You know, when you and I have spoken in recent years, we're always talking about the rebuild. How's it coming? What's the vision? You know, and here you are, and we're talking about something totally different. So from the outside, this entire rebuild that you've overseen seems like it's gone so much better than anybody could have expected. Is that the case, or maybe is this pretty much what you expected all along?
You know, I would say in my wildest dreams, maybe it wouldn't have gone as well. You know, I'm sitting here literally looking out my window, and that old building we were in has just been knocked down, and they're hauling off the rest of the dirt and those things, and that'll be a grass field. And, our new stadium will be ready hopefully in 2 years. They're started on it, and there's just so many good things going on in Birmingham. And I think, as I always say, you know, we're not more important than the degree and those other things, but athletics, specifically football, are so important to a university. And so just to see the pride in our students and our community is what we hope for. And you know, so I guess maybe it's a little better than I hope, but this was the plan, and now hopefully we've done the things that give this group a chance to be right there competing also.
You know, Bill, clearly you're not making it about you, but what have you learned about yourself as a leader and a coach throughout the entire process?
Well, I think experience is a great teacher, and I think everything I've done, and I don't try and say I too much, but I think I go back to being a high school coach and building different spots and, you know, kind of becoming a national team on high school. We start out South Alabama, bring the program from nothing, going to an FCS school. You know, all of those stops along the way kind of make you who you are, and I think that's the point of our, you know, as coaches, we're always asking our players, how do you handle adversity? And so, you know, I kind of had to put my money where my mouth is and say, okay, you know, how do I handle adversity? And so hopefully it teaches you that, you know, that if you believe and work hard enough, and involve enough good people, good things will happen.
UAB head coach Bill Clark joining us for a few more moments. So you mentioned the new facilities. When they're being built and you have the success you're having right now on the field, how different is life for you when you go out recruiting in high schools? As an example, earlier you would spend more time on junior colleges, and you still do that, but now do you feel like high school players know who you are and the opportunities that you can provide for them at UAB?
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, you hit the nail on the head. It is such a different day, and I used to say that about UAB when I was a high school coach. I mean, you know, you got this great city, and they love football, and really a school that was well known for medicine, but they didn't commit to football, and so that's what the kids saw, and you know, they saw, you know, maybe my high school is nicer than the college, and so, you know, now with facilities, which says we're committed, and it just makes your everyday not only just what they see, but just our everyday. You know, where we're training, where we're working, having a pavilion to get under for rain or heat, all those things that make our everyday so much better. But our recruiting is just, it's really totally changed. And once again, we've got to continue to put a good product out there, but it was just a totally different deal. The people we're looking at now and competing against, are the best of the best, really, you know, to get the players we're trying to get.
So finally, because the demolition started on the old locker room earlier this month, and when you think about where the program was when you arrived, where it's going, what was it like for you to see that building come down?
You know, it was crazy because it was, you know, I sit out and look at my window, and as I bring a guy out on the porch, I'd say, okay, see where we were, and they just couldn't believe it. I mean, it's really hard to believe comparing where we were to where we are now, But it was one of those things we needed to take it down to show, all right, progress, we're taking the next step. And I think that's what we all look for. You know, I said that about Birmingham. You know, let's not be scared to be great. Let's not be scared to believe and say we can win a championship here. And, you know, and sometimes people think that sets you up for failure. But I think you're not going to do these things if you don't talk about it and work it and believe it. And so to see that building coming down, I think was just the next step toward progress and saying, you know, we're continuing to try and be great here and take the steps we need to.
UAB won a conference title last year. They had their best record in school history, their first ever bowl win, and it starts up once again tomorrow night against Alabama State. The head coach, Bill Clark, our guest. Bill, it's great to get caught up. Good luck tomorrow night, and it's always nice to have you on the show. Thank you.
Jim, thank you. Always great questions, and appreciate you.
Every year around this time, a magazine comes out with athletes not wearing clothes. Yeah, I know, crazy, right? But wait for it. They're posed in such a way that you can't really see the junk that would make it X-rated. And then they try to pass it off like it's a celebration of athletic bodies, when really it's just about seeing how clever we can be with the poses and rip some cheap headlines and free pub. It's been going on for quite some time. And why anybody would pay any attention to it at this point is beyond me. I mean, seriously, that other magazine that releases an annual edition with models wearing swimsuits cannot believe how tired this has become. But for some reason, some people really care about it. Like, really, really care about it. And one of them, allegedly named Roxanne, took to Twitter to bash out her disapproval of Christian Yelich's decision to be in that magazine. In a tweet that is now hidden behind a locked Twitter account, Roxanne wrote, quote, "It's really sad that you didn't give a thought about all the young kids that idolize you before doing your naked photo shoot. Distasteful," end quote. You know what's really sad? It's really sad that anybody gives a bleep about somebody doing a photo shoot for a magazine, Roxanne. That's what's really sad. The only thing more sad and tired than this allegedly scandalous magazine is getting worked up about this allegedly scandalous magazine. And it's so tired. It's so played. It's so unedgy. It's so uninteresting that I can't believe that anybody would tweet about it. I mean, seriously. Who cares? Like, if I didn't know any better, I would think that it was all a fake controversy to generate attention for the magazine, like a plant or something. Because there's no way that anybody still gets that worked up about this, right? I mean, imagine taking the time out of your day, out of your life, to sit down at your gigantic desktop PC to tweet to Christian Yelich about him appearing in a magazine. And imagine going with the "you didn't give a thought about all the young kids that idolize you" blast. And then throwing in that "distasteful" at the end of that. That's great. I mean, that really is great. But why stop there, Roxanne? Why not go with it being abominable or abhorrent or objectionable or unpalatable? Roxanne, where do you live? That town in Footloose where dancing was banned? How are you even able to get Twitter in the first place? Do they even have internet in your town, Roxanne? What's next? Taking a run at Yelich for listening to that rock and roll music? Going down to the sock hop and dancing past 8 p.m.? Here, Roxanne, this just in. It's not porn. This also just in. I hate to say it, but, quote, all the young kids you're talking about, they can see far more graphic things in other places and probably already have. But you know what's really distasteful? You locking that thing up behind a wall. But I'll tell you what wasn't. Here's what's not distasteful. Yelich's response on Twitter, which was simply, and I quote, "Relax, Roxanne." It's perfect. That was a belt-high fastball, and he smoked it right into the seats. "Relax, Roxanne." That's so good. Don't be surprised if you see that on T-shirts, bumper stickers, and everything in between. I haven't seen somebody respond to a Twitter critic that well since CJ McCollum dropped the legendary, "I'm trying, Jennifer." And it's proof that if you're going to respond to trolls on Twitter, which you probably shouldn't, you better do it perfectly. CJ and Christian nailed it. And as if that were not enough, as if Yelich had already not dunked Roxanne into the center of the earth on Twitter, here he was coming to the plate in the bottom of the first last night. Roll this. That's right. Roxanne by the police. He walked up. He changed his music and walked up to Roxanne. He just landed the triple Lindy. This guy went from online to real life and did it absolutely flawlessly. Do you know how hard that is? Do you know how often that blows up in somebody's face? Nearly every single time, but not with Yelich. He nailed it. That is absolute perfection. That is so good. It almost does feel like a setup. This guy's batting 330 at the plate and 1,000 against Roxanne's on Twitter. Rox! The guy already made his point. Relax, Roxanne. I'd love to know if that was even his idea. Like, hey, wait, no, yo, how about this? I'm going to walk up to Roxanne tonight. It's so good. So good. I'm talking about Ice Cube. Cube, it's good to have you back. How are you?
I'm good, man. How you doing?
Good, good. Cube, it's a huge weekend for you, but before we get to it, let's go back to the beginning of the season. When you and I talked in May about the start of the league's third season and the fact that it was going to be on CBS and CBS Sports Network, what kind of expectations did you have for the season, and how great has it been?
Well, you know, I'll talk about that in reverse. It's been a great season. Incredible action. I think fans have had a great time at the events. You know, we're, you know, way better at putting on the games now than we were when we first started, when we was trying to figure it out. So that's been awesome. And CBS coverage been top notch, you know, exactly what we expected. You know, this is why they the leader in sports. They've been doing it, you know, forever, and can't nobody do it better. So it's been very cool to have the league presented in that way. You know, it just, you know, in the way that people are used to seeing top sports.
It's well said. I agree with you, Cube. Ice Cube joining us. Now, Cube, Joe Johnson has been named the league MVP after leading the triplets to this Sunday's championship game. He's always been a certified bucket getter, but how impressed have you been with what he's done this season?
Well, I mean, you know, he's perfectly you know, his game is perfect for 3-on-3. ISO Joe is his nickname, and he goes hard. He can score. He has so much body control, take you inside, outside, put you to sleep with the dribble, pull up on you, back you down. He got a floater. It's like I've only seen a few basketball players with no flaws in their game, and he's one of can't see one flaw in his game. And so he's the MVP of the league, and it's for a reason.
All right, now, based on what he's done this summer, Cube, there's been some talk that he might return to the NBA. How fired up would you be for him to get that shot because of the way he showed up in your league?
Well, you know, we would love it for him. You see, he's a guy who, if he really wants to get back, and he does, you know, we support 1,000%. We think the league is perfectly built for something like this. So, you know, if our players want to go back to the NBA, you know, we'll do everything in our power to help them. And they got to just come and play at a high level, impress some GMs and scouts and coaches, and hopefully they'll get invited to a camp and do what they need to do to make a roster. But we feel like the league has always been perfectly built for something like this. And, you know, when it happens, we'll take another leap in credibility.
Ice Cube joining us. Cube, let me stay on that point for one more moment, but with somebody else. I mean, to that point, Brian Scalabrine told Frank Isola, quote, "Joe Johnson would not be in the conversation if he didn't play in the Big Three. I want Carmelo Anthony to realize that. Hanging out with his trainer and playing in these bogus pickup games is not better than playing in the Big Three." End of quote. What's your reaction when you hear that? And would Melo be better off playing in the Big Three than running in pickup games with his trainer?
I think he would. And I think anybody who wants to show their skills, and, you know, three on three, you need all your skills. You know, you can't have any weaknesses or it's going to show. So to show that, you know, you can do all the things that people think you may not be able to do, the Big Three is the perfect platform. The games are, you know, live on CBS. I don't know how much better the exposure can be for a player than the Big Three. You know, going overseas, you might not get seen, but, you know, in the Big Three, you will get seen. You know, either you're going to get seen, you know, either they're going to come to the game or they're going to check you out on TV. There's no better basketball in the summer than the Big Three. So, you know, it's really the place to be if you really want to get back into the NBA or just show that you can still play at a high level. You know, whether you want to get back or not, it's still the best 3-on-3 league in the world.
Championship game is coming up Sunday on CBS. The pregame show is on CBS Sports Network. Ice Cube is joining us. Now, Cube, as good as Johnson and the triplets have been this year, they are going up against the killer threes on Sunday. It's a crew that knocked out the defending champs, Power, so you know they're not going to be a pushover. What do you like about what Steven Jackson and his team have done this year?
It's scrappy. I think, you know, the 50-50 balls win you games, especially in the Big Three. So, you know, you can't come out too lax, too overconfident, not giving 1,000%, because the killer threes are going to give 1,000%. They're going to get to the 50-50 balls. They're going to get extra shots up. And they got three guys that can come at you and score in double figures. So I just think you better not take them lightly.
Cube, Gary Payton, who coached the three-headed monsters this year, was named the league's best trash talker for the second straight year. I mean, there's some guys who could talk some trash in that league, but what's to say about the glove that he is once again the best?
Well, you know, when you're the best, can't nobody top you, you know, and, you know, he probably don't want to get out there and play no more, but his tongue is still in its prime.
That's great.
the glove is always going to be able to give you an honest opinion, and you got to be able to, you know, go blow for blow or just ignore him and keep playing. And that's probably the best thing to do, ignore him and keep playing, because he'll get you out your game. And he's still the best at it. Him and Kenyon Martin are pretty good.
Ice Cube's joining us. He is still good. He came on my podcast, Cube, recently, and he's lost nothing in that sense. He's lost nothing. Now, speaking of trash talking, you were one of the most legendary Laker fans around. Kobe was at an event in Las Vegas recently. He was asked what would happen if Shaq had Kobe's work ethic. His response was, quote, he'd be the greatest of all time. He'd be the first to tell you that, end quote. He went on to say, Cube, quote, I wish he was in the gym. I would have had 12 bleeping rings, end quote. So you know that quote. What's your reaction when you hear it?
Well, you wouldn't have had 12 rings. And another thing. Shaq is 7'2" or 7'1", okay? He was born with his skills, pretty much. He learned how to play basketball at a young age, but not as a little kid. So Kobe's a different animal. You know, he was kind of created in a way, and he honed his skills probably since he was a baby. And the work ethic to go from the high school into the pros is you can't top that work ethic as a 6'7" player. So you can't expect Shaq being that big to be in the gym as much as Kobe. It just ain't gonna happen.
All right, so these two dudes are built differently, to be sure. Let me get the other side of that. Shaq did respond, Cube, on Instagram, quote, you would have had 12 if you passed the ball more, especially in the finals against the Pistons. Hashtag facts. You don't get statues by not working hard, end quote. So what do you make of that response? Is that fair?
I think it's funny. They got three. And, you know, even the Bulls burnt out after three. You know, dudes was retiring. So three is a lot of championships to get in a row. And everybody's probably burnt after that. It happens, man. You know, let's move on.
We're talking Ice Cube. All right, so as we move on, as a Laker fan, what do you make, Cube, of what the Clippers did in the offseason by bringing in Kawhi and Paul George? As you saw that whole thing unfold, what did you think?
Well, I think in a lot of ways they took the easy way out. And the Lakers is the hard road. You know, you have championship banners. You have Hall of Fame jerseys looking down at you. And if you don't want that pressure, you go to a place where you can cover them up. And they're not looking down at you. So it's the easy way out. You know, if they win, they, you know, can say we brought the Clippers up. If they lose, they can say, hey, I'm on the Clippers. What you expect?
Last thought, though. Like, what if they're right? What if it works? Can you imagine a scenario where the Clippers are having a championship parade through Los Angeles? What would that feel like?
It'll feel like the Mets having a championship parade through New York. It'll be a blip on the radar.
Cube is a mogul. He is award-winning actor, director, producer, music icon, the founder of the Big Three, co-founder, and diehard Laker fan. Again, the championship game is coming up Sunday at 3 p.m. Eastern on CBS. The pregame show gets underway at 2 p.m. Eastern on CBS Sports Network. Cube, have a great weekend. Good luck with that, and always good to talk to you.
Always good, Jim, man. Thank you.
All right, so quickly, the Raiders preseason is officially over after tomorrow night's game in Seattle. And if their regular season goes anything like their preseason, then 17 weeks is about to feel like 17 years. Thanks in part to Mr. Big Chest, Antonio Brown. Now, I know that I said that I was done talking about Mr. Big Chest. And trust me, I so badly wish that were the case. But dude keeps forcing me to look at him and talk about him. I don't want to at all, but it is kind of my job, right? Now, you already know how AB's first training camp with the silver and black played out. From missed practices, to helmet grievances, to retirement threats, to frostbite, to circumcised feet. Antonio Brown has gone full Antonio Clown this preseason. And the clown business is absolutely booming.
Yeah, my feet is pretty much getting circumcised, right?
Right. Tag that laundry list of jackassery on any other player in the NFL, and you'd be baffled. Your head would be spinning. But since it's the NBC, it's pretty normal. It's normal, it's expected, it's tired, it's played out behavior. The problem is the guy seemingly just cannot stop. He can't take a break from being AC. Not even for a week. Because yesterday on Twitter, he fired up the Maytag and threw some rank old beef in the micro. If you thought AB was done thinking about Ben Roethlisberger and it moved on, you'd be wrong. Dead wrong. In fact, while dude got as far away from the berg as possible and threw a few extra duffels of cash in the vault and pledged his allegiance to Derek Carr nonstop, he still cannot stop thinking about Big Ben. And over the weekend, NBC aired an interview that Michelle Tafoya did with Ben. In the interview, she asked Ben about the time he openly criticized AB's route running last December. Here's how Roethlisberger answered that question.
That whole experience of calling out AB in particular.
Yeah, I wish I wouldn't have done it.
Why?
You know, because obviously we saw what happened, and obviously it ruined a friendship. Yeah, I just got caught up in the emotion, the heat of the battle.
All right, so I'm not saying this guy's without blame, all right? Far from it. But he said that he wishes he would not have done it. Like, he'd kind of like to have it back. And he said the reason why he wishes he had not done that is because it, quote, ruined a friendship. Hey, look, I'm not picking sides. And you can decide whether or not you think that he's sincere when he makes that statement. And while I'm not picking sides, I will definitely say Roethlisberger is not without blame. You know, I'd be the first guy to tell you that Antonio Brown's been acting like a diva wide receiver. Yeah, well, Ben acts like a diva quarterback often. But that's how he responded to that question. So the clip makes the rounds earlier in the week, and understandably it was buried beneath Andrew Luck's retirement announcement. So either AB didn't see it until yesterday, or he's a master of knowing how to get the most attention and getting people to look at him, so he waited until yesterday to respond. Either way, his response on Twitter was as follows, quote, "Never friends, just had to get my ends. Shut up already." Man, that is a beautiful freaking tweet. That is an amazing tweet. 11 words of pure, uncut entertainment. AB telling anyone, quote, to shut up already is so rich and so beautiful and so awesome. This dude has single-handedly made more headlines for all the wrong reasons than almost the entire league combined, without even playing a game. And he's telling somebody to shut up already. That is freaking great. And the part about never being friends is awesome also. I mean, it's so harsh. Never friends. Never friends. It's so harsh. Man, it's nasty. One problem, back in 2014, AB also tweeted that Big Ben was his best friend on the Steelers. So he's on record as calling him his best friend, but now he's saying never friends. Which one is it? Can't be both. And then last year, after Ben cracked his route running, Brown said, quote, "Ben's my guy, man. I love him. Anything he says, there's a method to his madness. It's only to inspire the group, encourage the group to be better. That's the type of guy he is." End of quote. Man, AB, can you believe people write this stuff down? Those damn receipts. Am I right, AB? Man, live by Twitter, die by Twitter. I guess Antonio's gotten wise to the fact that anybody can just search through his timeline and find all of his many contradictions. Because this time, after he nuked Ben and told him they were never friends and to shut up already, he did what a lot of people do after the most inflammatory tweets. He deleted it. The problem with this is deleting a tweet does not work. It does not work. It's a message to athletes or entertainers or people who are famous or politicians, anybody in the life. Next time you thumb something out, and I know you already do this anyway because you're addicted to the life, especially the social aspect of the life. Next time you thumb something out that's especially spicy, watch your likes. Like, I'm not a spicy guy, so I don't need to do this, but watch your likes. Bam, 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 right? They're lighting up, and the dopamine's going in your head. It's like a drug. Bam, 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 bam. All those people have seen it. Many of those people have captured it on a screenshot. You can't take it down. It's already out there. And once it's out there, all it takes is one other prominent person to push it out on their timeline. In other words, it's impossible to sandblast that tat. You cannot get it out. It's there forever. So no, you can't delete it. You cannot delete it. Bro, you should know this. And it was deleted. Like, I'm talking about it, right? So I know it didn't get deleted, even if you deleted it. And it was deleted well before I read it. And here I am talking about it and getting a whole segment out of it. So no, you cannot delete tweets. Bro, if you're finally going to do or say something interesting, at least stand by it and own it. Especially if we're all going to see it anyway. But the real issue here is not Twitter receipts or screenshots. The real issue here is what it all means for the Raiders. Especially Derek Carr. Like, if you're Derek Carr and you're watching your new biggest weapon meltdown left and right and completely turn on somebody who he used to refer to in public as his best friend, what the hell are you thinking is going to happen to you? Like, if this guy could do Ben like that, how is he going to do me when I miss him, when he's wide open a couple of times, or I underthrow him, or I overthrow him? I mean, sure, AB's been all about Derek Carr since he got to Oakland. All the reports indicate they're tight. But what does that mean? He himself said he was best friends with Ben Roethlisberger. He himself was on record only months ago as saying, I love him. Yeah, I guess every situation is different, right? But if I'm anybody on the Raiders, especially Derek Carr, I'm looking at what went down last night and I'm thinking to myself, damn, this dude can flip on me at any point. And does anybody in that locker room really want AB to call them out or hold them accountable if he's liable to go tell on you to shut up already on Twitter? Hey, don't be checking AB for anything. Don't say anything about his feet. Don't say anything about his helmet. Don't say anything about his blonde facial lettuce. He'll go right to Twitter and tell you to shut up already. And if you're in Pittsburgh, you've probably never been happier than to get rid of a future Hall of Famer. If you're in Buffalo, you've probably never been happier or luckier to avoid a future Hall of Famer. And if you're in Oakland, you have never been more unsure or more worried about a future Hall of Famer. Too late now. You traded for the guy. You paid the guy. Now you got to live with the guy. Shut up already. It's so good. Literally everybody listening and watching wants you to heed your own advice, AB. Especially as it relates to talking about that helmet. Langston Galloway is my guest. Langston, good to have you on. How are you?
Oh, doing great, Jim. How you doing?
Good, good. Good to run you down. So it's late August, which means that we are not that far from training camp opening up and the season starting. How has your summer gone so far?
Oh, it's been amazing. It really has been. It's a testament to just all the things I've been doing, just workout-wise, where I've been doing boxing, working on Pilates, yoga, just working on my defense. I'm big defensive guy for the Pistons, and I think that going into this upcoming season, that's going to be a huge key for us going forward to make a long run, is like having that guy that we can count on that's going to be able to lock down any offender we come across. So that's what I've been working on all summer.
Langston Galloway joining us. Something else that happened this summer, you were at Jamal Crawford's Summer League, the crossover, and you broke the record for points in a game with 66. Did you know you had something special in you when you showed up for that game that day?
Yeah, so that was my second game of the week. We played a game Saturday. It was me and DeAndre Ayton. We were on the same team, and both of us had really good games. I think I ended with a couple points, and he ended up with a really, really good game as well. But, I mean, halfway into the game on Sunday, Jamal was like, man, bro, you got to break the record. Just keep going, because I had 30 at halftime. And he was like, just keep going. I need you to get the record. And I just started rolling, really knocking down shots left and right. And this was just all the work I've been putting in all summer. Just really wanted to show it off. And I think that's what I was able to do.
See, the thing is, Langston Jamal, he's one of my favorite guys to talk to in the league and one of the all-time great bucket getters. So what's it mean to you to break his record?
Oh, that's amazing. It's amazing. I mean, such a genuine guy, a guy that is really like an idol in my eyes. But at the same time, he's a guy that really he leans on the younger guys to be like a leader and be just that veteran that you can kind of count on. And I think that he's really done that with me, give me pointers, give me advice over this last couple of years. And I really appreciate all he's done for me.
Detroit Pistons guard Langston Galloway is joining us. Now, as long as we're talking about legendary scorers, you recently retweeted a clip of Ray Allen talking about Reggie Miller and calling him the best shooter he's ever seen. I know the respect you have for their games. When you study them, what sticks out to you the most?
The biggest thing is just their preparation. Their preparation to get their shots off before they even get the ball. That's the biggest key that I've noticed over the last few years. With my game, trying to add that to my game, it's just the preparation that they put into it. And also, too, is just the hard work that they put in as well. And I think that for any great shooter, you have to prepare. You have to be in great shape. You have to do a lot of work with your legs and trying to get in position to get those shots off and having the confidence, too. So that's a lot of, like, extra shots before practice, extra shots after practice, just being able to put the work in. And I think that watching those guys over their careers and studying the greats, that's how you become great.
Langston Galloway is joining us. Now, your journey to this point is really interesting because, as I mentioned off the top, you were not drafted out of college, so you had to battle for everything you have right now. When the draft came and went and your name was not called, what was that moment like for you?
It was a huge humbling moment that I had to really take a step back and say, hey, look, I'm not as good as I think. And I really dove into saying, hey, do I want to go overseas or do I want to stay and chase this dream of mine and making it to the NBA? And at that moment, I was like, hey, look, it's not about the money. It's not about taking care of my family at this point. I just want to go out there and make my dreams come true. And then later on, those benefits will pay off. And that's what I did. I just stayed in the gym, just long nights, a lot of sacrifice that I put in. And I continue to do that to this day to keep me in this league.
You know, I want to reiterate that point. You could have gone overseas. And you could have made a lot of money, but instead you decide to play in the G League and just stay on the grind and stay on the dream. Then you get called up to the Knicks, and in your home debut at MSG, your second NBA game ever, you put up 19 points. You're guarding James Harden. I mean, that's the stuff of dreams. What do you remember about that game?
Man, I remember just the night before, all my friends are texting me like, bro, you got James Harden tonight, man. Like, just don't get called up. Just stay in front of him. And I was like, man. Like,
just stay in front of him.
And I just kept laughing, like, yeah, all right. And then, when Coach called my number that night, I was like, look, let me just go out here. Just have a good time. I mean, I'm competing for the rest of my life to go out there and prove that I belong. And I think that was, like, day one of that journey. And I think that it really was a testament to, hey, the Coach Fisher at the time was to be able to believe in me, number one, and then number two, just being able to go out there and show that, hey, I can do what I do just at the next level.
You see, journey is a good word, and there's a process involved here, and you've made it pretty clear you're not afraid to work. Like, your first season with the Pistons maybe did not go the way that you would have hoped, but you're coming off a really strong second season. So how different are you now as a player than when you first came into the league?
Oh, completely different. I mean, my body, really taking care of my body these last few years with being able to put in a lot more work in the gym, whether that's lifting, like I said, the Pilates, the boxing, just being able to be in better condition. And I think that's been my main focus, especially this summer, like being a huge defender in this league and being able to be the best in my role. I've really just tried to take it day by day and try to perfect that and helping and having guys help me, like Luke Cooper and guys like my therapist, Jason, and Joe Zerat. I mean, there's so many different guys that have helped me through the summer that have really put me in contact with a numerous amount of people, like my boxing trainer, Malik Jackson, just guys that have really stepped up and really helped me out.
It's your moneymaker, man. Body is temple.
Yeah.
Langston Galloway is joining us for a few moments. You know, you mentioned at the very top, the one thing you've been working on also is your defense, that you want to be one of those guys who can lock other guys down. I think if you know anything about your coach, Dwayne Casey, you're probably not going to get on the floor unless you commit defensively. I love this guy. What's it been like to play for Dwayne Casey?
Oh, it's been amazing. It's really had to. I mean, he, player coach, really just leans on the players to try to see, hey, what you're seeing out there, what can we work on, what can advice can you get to younger guys? Always just trying to benefit the players. And I think that Dwayne's really been successful in this league, and he's going to continue to be successful in this league with having that approach. And I think that it's really been great for me over this last year.
Langston, you are a legendary sneakerhead. So before I let you go, I've got to ask you, and there's no way I don't ask you about your LG kicks.
Yep.
Let me ask you about them, and how did you first get hooked?
Yeah, so, I mean, I think when I was in college, I really got hooked on just being able to say, hey, I can afford these shoes that I really want to go out and purchase. And my love kind of started with the Jordan 13 that he got games. And then it's kind of grown. It's kind of grown where I have a huge collection now. But LG Kicks is like more about just talking about my collection, but then also, too, wanting to see what's in other people's collections and learn about what they have going on and teaching them more about, like, the branding and the marketing behind every single kick that comes out. So it's truly been, like, just an honor to be able to talk to different people that are in those higher places, like the different brands, and then now have my own shoe company, Q4 Sports, and us being able to kind of promote ourselves and really grow from a small market, a small brand, and really grow it into something big.
Good for you. That's exciting. And then you broke out a pair of Toy Story kicks in December 2018. Yep. They're in the Hall of Fame right now. How did those shoes come about, and what was it like when you heard the Hall of Fame wanted them?
Yeah, so at first, when we had going into preseason last year, they kind of took out the restrictions on color restrictions in the NBA. And I was like, hey, look, this is a perfect opportunity for me to really showcase what I love and what I'm passionate about. And, I mean, I love the 90s cartoons. I was born in the 90s, and just being able to talk about and show off every single cartoon, every single movie that I love and really appreciate. And you know, Nickelodeon, Cartoon Network, I mean, so many different things came out around that time. And I was like, hey, look, I got to really – dive into this, and Toy Story was like the main thing. I was like, hey, look, I think this will take off and blow up, and having Buzz and Woody on the shoe, I mean, that was amazing. And just the small touches that go into it really helped out, especially being with Q4 and them letting me do something like that.
And the Hall of Fame wanted them and has them. So bottom line, what is your favorite pair right now?
Favorite pair, in my opinion, I have a pair of the Grinches. That was a Christmas shoe I wore. It was like the day after Christmas. We played the Atlanta Hawks. And I was like, man, look, I think this would be dope. Like having like the old school Grinch and then having the new school Grinch on both of the shoes and really like playing with that. And I think that was, it turned into something that was pretty cool. And I think a lot of fans really appreciated it. And then I didn't get to explain more about the Hall of Fame, but yeah, now my Detroit Pistons PR reached out to me and was like, hey, look, I think something special is coming. I think you should give me a shoe, then I can make something happen. I'm not going to tell you what's going to happen, but look, just give me a shoe. And I was like, nah, I'm not about to give you a shoe. And next thing you know, he's like, look, I promise you, it's going to be cool. Gave my shoes, and like probably like a month later, he showed me a picture. And he was like, yo, look at this. And I was like, man, like, it's something crazy. And he was just like, yeah, the Hall of Fame, man, up. And I was like, wow. So.
Dude, I'm so glad that's the way that went. And he didn't say, give me the shoes. And you're like, nah, I ain't doing that. And he goes, no, man, I'm serious. Give me the shoes. I promise you will not be disappointed. And then you see a dude walking around the facility in your kicks. He's right. Running in your kicks. He's walking around in your kicks. No,
yep.
Man, that would have been bad. Yep. That would not have gone well. He is entering his sixth NBA season. Detroit Pistons guard Langston Galloway, my guest. My man, I'm glad we came together. It's good that we could finally do that. Appreciate you, and I appreciate the conversation.
Hey, Jim, thank you so much for having me on, and I really appreciate you guys tuning in.
Let's go to L.A. quickly to wrap hour number two. Matt in L.A. Hey, Matt, what's up?
Van Smack. Hey, since the days that the Honorable Judge Mills Lane was explaining to all of us that was the answer to that question, I've had your back, Romy, and mainly because of the camaraderie that you've brought in this here jungle. I want to harken back to Friday night, Rick in Buffalo, SoCal. We had the likes of Ben in Costa Mesa, Hester, Mike D and John in HB, Brad and Dana Point, Luis in Palmdale, Bossman Beaks, Rich, Silk Bra, and even the HBPD, who was doing their best impersonation of Reno 911. It was an epic night, to say the least, Pimp, and that's, you know, kudos to you, totally. So just wanted to let you know that you've created quite an environment here. So also, moving forward, to all these trolls that think Andrew Luck owes you something, he doesn't owe you guys a damn thing. Brother Man was out there playing his heart out. I'm sorry if he wrecked your fantasy football team or even your Colts franchise for a few years, brother, but check it out. He's the one who's going to have to deal with brain injuries or even, like, not walking right for the rest of his life. So, hey, man, unless you are Andrew Luck, STFU. That's all I got, Jimmy. Wore James Kelly's gumball dispenser skullcap and shoestring arms and unwore all the trolls of the NFL. Outro.
Matt in L.A. Do you ever think Matt in L.A. would be the guy to spit that kind of knowledge? That kind of wisdom. He's right. In HB, Silk, take your time. Set it up. What's up?
What's up, brah?
What's up, brah?
So it was so great because, you know, we talked earlier, but then the pool party on Friday at your cousin Corey's house, of course, he's married to your niece, Karis. So, you know, we were over there. And, of course, now Corey's nickname among all of our friends is Cousin Corey, which is great. So that was fun. And I, just real quick, I hope we did not overstep by hooking your family up at dinner Friday night, because a friend of mine's a manager at the restaurant you were at, brah. So I don't like to get into any personal stuff, but we were just trying to do something nice for you, brah.
Dude,
so
if you had any juice at all, you would have picked up the tab, but that's not what you did. No, Silk, it's all good. Well, it's all good. Listen, really quick, and finish your thought, but I want to make sure everybody knows this. Silk, you go so far back, you literally have known everybody and anybody ever associated with this show. Back when we had tour stops, you went to all of them on the road. Like, you've experienced almost everything that's ever happened on or off the air with this show. With that in mind, I need you to lay out the experience with Rick in Buffalo and how it compares to some of the other things you've seen and done with the show over the past quarter century.
Well, this was really cool because it was way more personal for me, because as being a fan of the show for as long as I have, but this took place in my hometown, and I was actually involved with some of the logistics along with Rich Flores. So it was really cool. And to see Rick was kind of overwhelmed, brah. You know, he on the air, you know, he's one guy, but in person, you know, he's a pretty chill dude. And he really had a good time and was kind of overwhelmed. And then to see the clone, dude, you know, nobody rallies like the clones. Nobody circles the wagons like the clones. So to see, you know, I didn't really know for sure. I mean, I knew for sure maybe there was going to be 20 people at Kit's place, brah. So to see the people who rallied, the place was packed. I gave them a heads up, and the bartender's a friend of mine. I told her. They ran out of glassware a couple times. There was this one dude named Brad who bought like 20 or 25 Jack and Coke so we could do a tribute to Randall. And the guy from the Goo Goo Dolls who does their merch, dude, that it's hard to tell in the picture, but he showed up with, like, there was a Goo Goo Dolls Yeti. He had like $500 worth of merch for Rick. And then, of course, Brad, the HBPD story was epic.
Tell me how that played out. What did you guys think when the HBPD rolled in?
Right. The rep of Kits, of course, you know, it's been a little maligned, but all in good fun. I totally get that. And it's just literally blocks from my house, little local dive bar, just a cool place to hang. I've never seen the police in there, not ever. So we're all at the back of the bar. In walks HBPD. Of course, my antennae are up, brah. So I'm like, what is this? I know I Ubered over there, brah, so I'm in good shape. And they're literally, like, eyeing the whole place. Like, it looks like they're mad dogging, but I'm like, what is this? Three cops. So they walk all the way to the back, like, kind of past us, stand in the corner, turn around, look the other way. And I was standing next to Rick because the Goo Goo Dolls guy had just dropped off the merch. He does the, you know, Lawrence Fishburne Neo Matrix thing with the hand and waves at us to come over. And I'm like, me? And he goes, no, the other guy. Because, you know, of course, Rick is wearing all his Buffalo gear. Rick goes over there. I didn't go near, Brad, because, you know, I know to stay away from HBPD. And then it's confirmed, Brad, as they're walking out, they're like, oh, yeah, we knew Rick was going to be here, Brad. It was epic.
Dude, that is crazy. What time was that?
That was probably maybe 10:30, 10:45 at night.
Did Rick did Rick turn even more pale than he already is?
You know what? You think, you know, people are saying, like, did he yell at them? No.
Did he try to fight them?
But he looked a little unsure of himself walking over there. Because, like I said, three HBPD, and they weren't, like, in their Sunday best. They were in their, like, you know, overnight semi-tactical gear. So it made everybody pause for a moment, bro.
They didn't have guns drawn, though, right?
They did not. But I saw one of them. I kind of got the feeling like two of them maybe were big fans of the show. The other guy wasn't. The guy who wasn't did have his hand on his taser, bro.
Silk's breaking it down for me. So, Silk, like, how many clones do you think showed up for this thing at KITS?
Oh, I would say probably, and if you count, a few of them dragged their significant others who really looked like in full shock. Of course, my wife was there, and she knows the show, so she's chill. But I would say there was probably like, and remember, this bar is small, so the place was, you couldn't move in there. There was probably like 40 plus, maybe more.
So what was management's reaction? Like, just standard Friday night, or like, damn, even we have never seen something like this in this place?
Well, when it comes to this bar, you can use the term management very loosely. There is no manager there. You basically have the bartender, and they run the show. I've met the owner once or twice, but they're not there on a daily basis. So it was really just my friend Yvonne, who's the bartender, and even she gave me a look like, wow, this is a lot bigger than I thought. And then, of course, like, the usual crowd was there, and when they are all asking what's going on, and when people would explain it to them, there were some undercover clones there too who didn't know that Rick and Buffalo was going to be there, but were also fans of yours, bro. So then it turned into, you know, Rick was posing for pictures, and it was like a whole deal, bro. It was killer.
That is great. Silk Bra breaking it down. That's how you do it. All right, before I let you go, is there anything else that I need to know or we all need to know about that week, or are we good?
We are good, although, like I said, your super close family connection to my friends is now living on in infamy. And don't think we didn't put on the Sonos, brah, and Stucknut sent us a link to you cracking on my buddy Corey, and we weren't listening to it at the pool, brah, with our high-tech pool party style, brah.
Yeah, I would not say that if I didn't think it was going to get back to you, of course. So good. Glad to hear it. Oh, and by the way, bro, thanks for setting me up for that dinner Friday night. Much appreciated. Good looking out.
You're welcome, bro. Anytime, bro.
Good night now.